Everybody, if it's Tuesday at 1, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. I want to welcome everybody to the call today. I want to especially welcome the new members from the Dallas and the Portland boot camps. Welcome aboard. And, wow, it is a beautiful October day out here in Boston. One of those rare October days where it's actually in the 80 degrees, walking around in shorts. Even though by the end of the winter, we'll be walking around in shorts at 40 degrees and thinking it's balmy. But it's a beautiful day today. So I hope everybody's doing fine. I have a reminder of some upcoming events. We've got the Boston Immersion Training, which is happening October 13th through the 15th. We have got the Private Money Bootcamp that's happening October 20th to the 22nd. That's in Long Beach. We have the Dallas Immersion, October 27th to the 29th. Portland Immersion, November 3rd to the 5th. The two-day business building, which I'm actually teaching here, November 15th and 16th. I used to say that's the only event I teach anymore, but that's not true after the last weekend, although I'll talk more about that in a second. And then we have the sponsorship event, which is November 17th and 18th here in Rockland. So if you're not scheduled for any of those events and they appeal to you, just call the office, 781-878-7881. 7114. Get yourself on the list. I mentioned that last part, the two-day business building bootcamp. I hadn't really taught in 2 years since I had the kids. And I had traveled really hard for 12 years, building a portfolio from 800 units when I first started teaching to over 8,000 units. And then building this education company from zero students to over 140,000 students. So those 12 years, I worked really hard and then decided I just needed to take some time off, wanted to raise a family, which was good. And we had Steve replace me out there at the Multifamily Millions Bootcamp, which I couldn't have asked for a better replacement. He's a good guy, great teacher, knows the business. And then all the other events I used to teach as well and find replacements from within the student body, actually, just as our coaches are come from the student body, and our mentors that come out to your home or office come from the student body. Actually, investors that, you know, a lot of them started with no experience. They went through the events, and they started doing deals, and then they get to a certain level of deals, and they either come to us and ask us, you know, if there's a possibility that they can teach, and or they we reach out to them to see if they might be interested. But anyways, I was only teaching the business building because it's right here in my backyard. I love to teach business building. I went to Harvard for their executive MBA program, and we get to go to the Harvard Club, which I love to go to, and have a dinner, which I bring everybody for. And then, you know, the kids are going to be about a year old, and somebody said, hey, the Multifamily Millions Bootcamp is going to be in Boston. Why don't you teach it? And I thought, oh, that would be nice. I haven't taught in a couple of years. That would be a lot of fun. And then at Ultimate Partnering 9, we came up with a couple of different ideas from all of the different – feedback we've gotten from students within the programs. And basically the first one was is that they just didn't feel comfortable doing their pitch, doing their presentation. So we created a program called Perfect Your Presentation. And I thought, well, if we do it in Boston and if we do it close, which is Plymouth, I'll teach that. It's 2 days. I've raised over $140 million now in private money. So let's just go over the basics and not just the basics of how to do the presentation, but the psychological basics of a presentation, the formatting of a presentation, the delivery, and from basics to a very high level. So we did that. That went really well in Plymouth. And then right behind that, we had created Elevate. And Elevate really is all about getting inside of your head and doing the work that you need in order to get to in order to elevate your game. And I'll tell you, I was really looking forward to teaching that. You know, I come from a place of scarcity. When I first started investing in apartments, I did it out of necessity. People ask me all the time, you know, what was the one thing that really turned you around? I get this a lot in one-on-one conversations and also when I'm being interviewed by people and on the radio or something. And they always want to know what that one thing was. You know, what was the moment? You know, when did you hit bottom? Like, I never really hit bottom. I was, like, skimming along the bottom for a long time. But I got to a point where I was just tired of being broke, and that was how I was taught to live. You know, all of my limiting beliefs that, you know, put me in that place of living a life of being broke or skimming off the bottom or a life of scarcity, that was all taught to me. And I couldn't break free from that because I didn't understand that it was something I could actually break free from. So fortunately, somebody had found a copy of Earl Nightingale's Lead the Field. And they thought, I don't know why they thought I might like it, but they gave it to me and said, hey, you might be, and it was a cassette series, just how long ago it was cassettes. And I said, that's interesting, plugged it into my car and started listening, and I thought, whoa, that's really interesting, and if this is really true, then this could be very interesting. So I started doing the things that they taught you and Lead the Field, and then I got the very short 45-minute audio called The Strangest Secret. And I started applying some of the principles, and man, things started to change. So before you know it, I had a library that was full. You know, there was no Amazon.com back then. I was at the bookstore every month. I was getting books on how to invest in real estate, and I was getting books on how to change the way you think. You know, books like Unstoppable, books like Raise the Bar, The Magic of Thinking Big, Anthony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within. All these great books. I was basically feeding my mind. I was converting over from living a life of scarcity to seeing a possibility of living a life of abundance. And it's not even seeing the possibility. It's actually living it. And as you live it, it starts to happen. And so through the years, and then, you know, I'd become very successful investing in apartments. I'd become very successful in a couple of other businesses. And all of a sudden, I realized that I had been in a funk. I had been in a funk for about probably a good 2 or 3 years. And it probably took me about a year and a half, 2 years to recognize it. And then another, you know, year or so to do something about it. You know, things were going – I got into that mode of being comfortable. If you ever heard me speak at the boot camps over the FaceTime or Skype, I always talk about the fact that in order to be successful, you have to get uncomfortable. You know, and your biggest adversary right now is the fact that you are too comfortable. And I'd gotten pretty comfortable. You know, things were well. I'd already gotten over the I don't deserve this. You know, when all of a sudden you become very successful and you come from a place of scarcity or limits, you first have to get through the I don't deserve this part. And then I had gotten over all that, but I just wasn't forging ahead, and I couldn't figure out why. So I went to talk to somebody about it, a professional, and we're talking about where, you know, where I had come from, where I had gone to, and then where I was at that particular time. And he said, what do you think the transition was between, you know, the way you were living in that one-bedroom apartment, you know, with the 12-year-old car and credit card bills far surpassing your income? You know, what do you think what was the transition? And I told him, very excitedly, I told him about Earl Nightingale, Lead the Field, and Anthony Robbins, and all these people that I've been listening to and reading voraciously. And he said, well, what are you listening to now? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, who are you listening to now? Who are you following? I thought, well, I'm really not following anybody. And he said, well, are you reading anything? Are you watching any YouTubes? Are you watching any TED Talks? I said, not really. And he said, well, why not? I said, well, I don't know. I guess a lot of people come to me for answers, and I'm the answer guy. So, maybe I think I should have all the answers. And he said, well, that's your problem. I said, what's my problem? He said, just stop doing and we'll get you there. He said, go back to reading. You know, find someone to follow. Find some good techniques on limiting beliefs and values and gratitude. And he listed a bunch of different things, and he actually gave me a couple of referrals to start reading. And I did, and I got back into it. And that was about 4 or 5 years ago now. And I got back into it. I did Ironman, and I did all these things. So, and I always talk about when I was teaching boot camp, and I know when Steve teaches it as well, is that, you know, this is a business of business. This is a business of winning the head games. There's two different games you got to win. You got to win the head game. You got to win the business game in order to be very successful. A lot of times the head game cuts your legs right out from under you before you win the business game. So when the prospect of actually teaching all of these different things that I had been studying all through the years, you know, especially the things that worked the most for me, to a group was really appealing. So, you know, I was talking to my partner, Bob Bowman, and it's probably about 3 weeks before, and I said, "Are you coming to Elevate?" And he said, "Oh," he says, "I don't know." He says, "What's it all about?" I said, "No, it's all about winning the battle in your mind." And he said, "Oh," he says, "I'm not sure if I'm going to make the trip." I says, "Bob, make the trip." I says, "This is going to be a great 2 days." Well, I mean, for the last 2 days, I talk to him almost every morning on my way into the office. We have our morning business call, and for the last 2 days, he just can't stop talking about the breakthroughs that he had and the different things that he's doing and working on. And it was just a really, really good 2 days of Elevate. So I taught that. So I'm back out. Elevate is actually two more meetings with the group that the founding group of Elevate. And so I'm teaching that, but that's it. I do business building and I do Elevate, and that's it. So if you want to come and you want to learn some business building stuff, we're going to do 2 days here, November 15th and 16th, and I'm going to take you to the Harvard Club, which my Harvard class reunion is actually this weekend. I'm really excited about that. My class is meeting at one of our fellow students' houses up in Marblehead. I'm thinking, I haven't been to his house, but he must have a pretty big house. There's a class of about 118, and probably about 50% will go to the reunion because everybody's from all around the world. Everybody's running businesses, so usually at these reunions we get about 50%. And it's the great thing about the Harvard class reunions is the fact that you go on campus, you're mixed in with all other different years as well. So there's usually like anywhere from 10 to 12 different reunions going on at the same time. But what they do is the business school, when it's a business school reunion, they treat the 2 days, the Friday and Saturday of the reunion, like a business school. So they've got a great syllabus of topics of different classes to go to. For instance, I happen to have it in front of me here. I was just circling some of the stuff that I was interested in going to. So, for instance, this is my choice on Friday. Think like a CFO. What's the most important report a CFO creates? How tightly should a CFO control expenses? What kind of meetings should CFOs attend? And whom should CFOs interact? Over the last two decades, the answers to these questions have changed as the CFO role has changed. You know, I say it a lot, but I'm not a big numbers guy, and I'm always looking to improve my skills of being a numbers guy. And that particular topic isn't just for CFOs; it's for it's for anybody in the organization, and everybody in the organization that should be thinking like a CFO. They have one on entrepreneurship essentials. That's the next meeting. Design thinking and innovative problem solving. That looks like a good one. I checked that one off. Reinventing your business for the digital age. Strategy rules, 5 timeless lessons. That's going to be a good one. That's based off a book, by the way. You can all get the book. I ordered it as well before I go to the session. It's called Strategy Rules, 5 Timeless Lessons from Bill Gates, Andy Grove, and Steve Jobs by Yoffie, Yoffie. There's another one, why there are big opportunities in the marketplace to buy smaller businesses. You can buy businesses just like you buy apartment buildings. I've always been interested in that, so I'm going to go to that one as well. Digital innovation and transformation, another good one. So there's a lot of them. Harvard now has an innovation lab, so they've got a tour of the innovation lab. There's 2 of them. The first one started about 5 years ago. They created a second one over in Austin. That's going to be good. They've got a whole research library for business. They take you through the step-by-step on how to actually, if you've got a great business idea, how to do the research on that business idea. So a lot of good stuff. So the reunions aren't just like, hey, let's get together and drink. It's like, hey, let's get together the night before, drink, and then let's go to a bunch of different classes during the day, get together for a big gala dinner, drink, and then get together for the next day, do a bunch of classes, have lunch, and then get together for a nice big dinner, drink, and then the next morning everybody gets together and says bye with a hangover. That's the way it goes. But anyways, as I digress, I want to, I've been talking for a while now, I want to give a high five. We start all these calls with a high five. This high five goes out to Laura Momatel and Nissan Mosri because they recently purchased a 240-unit hotel room in Memphis, $2 million price tag. They got the property through a referral. It has two restaurants and a bar where Elvis used to frequent. I remember I used to go, I buy a lot in Huntsville, and there used to be a Holiday Inn down there, which they've just recently torn down, where Elvis used to go there a lot, too, and they had his picture in the front, and they had the Elvis suite, which I used to get when I could. But anyways, too, this deal also has a 5,000-square-foot conference center along with a pool and a fitness center, and it's located in the heart of Memphis. So high five to Laura and a high five to Nissan. Yeah. All right, I am going to, if you want to get a question in, press star zero. Star zero will get you on the queue. The operator will take your name, she'll put you in the queue, and then she'll introduce you to the call. As you're queuing up, pressing star zero right now, I am going to answer a question that was emailed in. There's several emailed in, but I know I talked long, much longer than I usually do at the beginning, so I want to take as many live questions as I can. But Eric Bodawala from Dallas, Texas. By the way, that sounds like the name of one of my Harvard classmates. She was from Nigeria. I hope she's going to be there. We should call her Big Mama. And her and her husband own the largest importing company in Nigeria. And the largest and the product that was imported most, so the single most imported product in Nigeria, very ironically, was Guinness beer. That was a very weird fact, but it's true. So Eric goes on to ask, I know your system teaches to buy apartments using the Holy Trinity. Are there certain numbers that you recommend to sell at? I don't think this was covered at boot camp. There's not certain numbers that we recommend to sell at. Certainly, you know, if you should be doing some sort of a value add, and hopefully you're going to reach your value add goal, your cash flow goal. So you're always looking at your exit when you're doing your entrance. So on your exit, especially in this market, say you're going in at a 7 cap, you figure you're going to sell off at a 7.5 cap. So the value add not only has to maintain value, but also increase value in order for you to get a nice bump on the disposition. So I think that's the way you look at it. You look at it in terms of, you know, how am I going to increase the net operating income that's going to give the investors what I projected that they're going to get through the value add, and through the increase of the capitalization rate that is most likely going to happen over the next 3 to 5 years. All right, I'm going to open it up for calls right now. I got plenty of other questions I can go to in case there's a lull in the action. Operator, who is first on the Wisecracker line?
Okay, our first question comes from Laura. Laura, please state your question.
Laura.
Hey there. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Yeah, it was nice seeing you this weekend.
Yeah, that was a good time at Elevate.
Yes, thanks again for sharing all of that life-changing information. My brain is boiling right now. I'm actually at our marina in Charlotte, the one that we acquired about, 2 years ago?
And it's perfect. Partnering event.
Yes, diversifying, yes. And so it's perfect setting because there's so much going on in my head right now. I needed the calm and the peace to reorganize everything to put up a plan for next year and the end of this year.
There's a lot of organization during the Elevate, and there's a lot to do as well. I knew I was, I get started. You know, I told the class that, you know, one of my problems was I love sugar, and I have this problem of eating sugar at night between 6 and 10 o'clock, or 7 and 10 o'clock, really. So yesterday was my first kicking day, and you know that saying that I said, you know, the only person you measure yourself against is the person you were yesterday. And last night I did not eat any sugar after 7 o'clock, although I must say it was my sister's birthday, so we had a big cheesecake right before that, but I didn't have any after 7. So, hey, so that deal, that Memphis deal, so you just closed on that hotel.
Yes. The hotel, yes, it's been very exciting. It required quite some repair, some improvements, and a lot of TLC, but it's very well worth it. I think that by now we have, I think the valuation is about $5 million right now, and we are signing a lease on the restaurant that's going to bring us an additional $8,000 a month plus 10% on the gross revenues, and that's going to save us also because we won't have to serve free breakfast anymore. So that's going to add about $200,000 to our NOI. So So even if you take a very, very conservative 10 cap to that, you know, divide the $200,000 by 10%, and that's an extra $2 million that that should be added to the value. So we're very excited. Can't wait for the next year P&L.
Who presented you with that deal?
A friend who was buying a hotel from the same owner, and he didn't have enough funds or enough power to purchase two hotels at the same time, and he didn't want this one to go away. So he said, "Hey, I know you guys are looking to buy hotels. Are you interested?" And also, he was looking at it. And we saw the potential it could have, given the fact it's only 5-minute drive from the airport and less than 5-minute drive from Graceland. So it can maximize, you know, its source of guests. You know, we get it from both sides. So it's really exciting.
That's awesome. Congratulations. That's you know, hotels are so much different than apartments because, number one, you know, the leasing is nightly. And there's food involved, so it's two big differences, but certainly is an opportunity to expand for anybody that's doing multifamily successfully.
Yes.
So good, congratulations to you guys. Hey, we should
thank
have an
you.
Event
yeah,
up there, 5,000 square foot conference room.
Yeah, you guys are going to come have your next conference in Memphis? I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, we should look into that. That would be fun. Memphis would be fun.
Yeah,
yep.
It's a fun town, and the food is delicious.
You guys going to feed us peanut butter and banana sandwiches? Elvis's favorite?
Elvis' favorite? Yes, absolutely. It will be on the menu for sure. We'll take good care of you.
All right, awesome. Did you just pop in to talk about that hotel? Do you have a question?
Yeah, I also had a question. No, actually, I was very surprised to hear about us on this call. I'm like, yay! Awesome. Thank you, Dave. I was wondering how we've had something come up in the past and come up again about sellers' lack of communication or delay in communication when we are under contract. So when that happened the first time a while ago, we added a clause that says that when we don't hear from the seller and he's not responsive by email or any sort of way that we can actually track, that it extends all of the time frames by the time it takes him to get back to us. You know, he's got 48 hours to respond, and if he doesn't, then that extends everything. But have you found any other way to push seller or sometimes when we're in a seller position, buyer's communication? Did you find anything that worked well to push the other party to basically to light a fire under their butts and get a yay and nay or, you know, go to hell answer?
Usually the communication, if there's bad communication, it happens at the beginning for me that I've found. I haven't gone down the route where midway through or as you're going on, it doesn't communicate. You know, the poor communication usually comes in terms of the financials, not getting the financials over to you in time, or at the very beginning, it's they're courting other buyers. But being midstream, I don't really have any good techniques. Maybe someone, who's listening that was involved in something like this has a good technique, and they can chime in.
All right, cool. Well, yes, I guess we'll continue to play it by ear. I think it's also important to get a strong attorney for the negotiation, someone who is responsive too.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely get all
right,
attorney
well. Yeah, fantastic. Well, as always, thank you so much for sharing all of your wonderful knowledge, Dave.
Right on,
and
pleasure.
And we'll see you soon again.
All right, talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, who's next?
Up next, we have Nissan. Nissan, please state your question.
Hey, Dave, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Oh, wow. Yeah, again, thanks for a great week, man. It was great being out there in Plymouth. I really enjoyed Plymouth, you know, all the history and whatnot. Being out there.
Yeah, you had both presentations.
Yeah. The perfect your presentation. Richard Wilson gave some great information. I'm going to be flying to New York in a couple of days to be at the Deal Flow Summit over there, and then he's got the one in December in Miami, so that should be really, really good.
That reminds me, for everybody that's in Mastery, for Perfect Your Presentation, we're actually doing a field trip I usually do every year with Mastery students as well, and it's to Richard Wilson's event, a family office event down in Miami. And what we'll do is we'll talk about, even if you haven't done your first deal yet, the experience of going down and presenting yourself in front of these people, and it's really a networking event. You're not going to give a presentation per se, but it's probably one of the easiest networking events to do with the highest net worth people to do it with. And so what we do is about a month before, we're going to have a call for everybody that's going down there, and I will explain to you how to prepare for that call, how to, for that event, how to dress for that event, what you're going to be exposed to, and most importantly, how to talk at that event, you know, what language to use to the people that you're speaking with, because there's certain languages and a certain way you're going to present yourself, certain things you're going to put in your presentations when you give them a presentation book and your one-page executive summary that you don't put in other people's. So we're going to talk all about that. Richard Wilson gives us a discount. I don't get anything from bringing everybody down there, but I do get a group discount. So it's $795, but you got to get it through this office called Jeannie, Jermaine. Get it through this office. Otherwise, it's regularly $9.95. And if you go through his website, I won't know you're on the list, so you won't be on the calls. And then we meet there the night before, again, to strategize what's going to happen the next day, and then it's game on. And I used to try to set up another meeting for the end of the day, the second day, but so many people had different meetings and so many other people that we set up a follow-up call at the end. But, yeah, so that is the Wilson Family Office event. It's in Miami, December 5th and 6th, and it's going to be great. I usually take a group of about 25 people down there, and it's just going to be good. So you want to go to that. So call Jeannie, get the information, and get on the list.
Yeah,
all right, thanks
absolutely.
For mentioning that. Forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned this past weekend about cryptocurrency. Do you want to talk about that now a little bit, or is that for another call?
No, this is a mastery call. We had talked.
Okay.
One of the things we did at Elevate is we talked about other ways to make money. But no, I don't want to talk about that here.
Okay. So we're looking at different markets, and you know we're seeing a lot of properties coming in under the Holy Trinity. You know, and I personally am having a difficult time. Really getting, really looking at properties that have that Holy Trinity. Can you help me with that? Is it, when I'm underwriting, do I need to make sure that I'm getting the Holy Trinity at the underwriting with the seller's numbers? Or is it something that I could work up to?
Well, I mean, you got to get it with the seller's numbers and then you work your offer. You know, a lot of people are out there and one of their big people that are just starting out, they're saying they can't find any deals because, you know, nothing makes sense with the Trinity. Well, you know, the seller's not going to come onto the market with a property at Trinity. They're always going to be higher and sometimes way higher, especially in this particular phase of the market. So you determine where the right strike price would be based on the Trinity and then start negotiating, you know, from about 10 or 20% below there.
Okay, so basically
strike price.
So we have to work our numbers with the seller's numbers. We have to tweak the seller's numbers so that we can get to the Holy Trinity and then put the offer in.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Just wanted to clarify that for myself and whatnot. Awesome, man. So I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks in Boston.
See you at a sponsorship. Yep.
At the sponsorship. I'm looking forward to it. Awesome.
It's going to be good. All right. Good to see you, Nissan.
All right. Take care, Dave. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Who's next?
Up next, we have Scott and Heidi. Please go ahead.
Hi, Scott and Heidi.
Hey.
Hey, Dave.
How are you?
How's it going? Good.
Good, good. Just want to say thank you for we went to the Perfect Your presentation, and that was that was awesome. We got a lot of good nuggets out of that, and a lot of good networking opportunities. So look forward to going to the Wilson Conference too, and we'll be seeing you up in Boston next month for the business building and sponsorship too.
Oh yeah, you're gonna love that. It's gonna be good. Yeah, business building and sponsorship are back to back, so we made it easy for anybody that's making that trip. So you get, you know, it only has to be one trip. Yeah, good. So what's on your mind?
Well, I was just sitting here working through some numbers, and you know, I was just wondering on the rule of thumb numbers that you give. Like, I'm looking at some lower unit properties too. Are those rule of thumbs true even for like say a 25 unit building? Do they still work?
The breaking point's like at about 20 units. So the rule of the rule of thumbs go on the lower side because it's a lot. It costs less. The break evens it's less, and the expenses are less. I think the minimum number at like a 20 to 30, 20 to 40 unit property is about 37-38% of gross rent or gross scheduled rent. That's the lowest you can go. You can't go much lower than that when on the expenses.
Okay. I was just wondering because, you know, you're kind of like what Nissan was saying. Some of the numbers I was looking at are way off from, you know, what the seller's asking. So I was just making sure there wasn't something in there I was missing.
Yep. Nope. Yeah, they're going to be way off. That's just the nature of the beast, you know. You got to kiss a lot of frogs before you're going to get to the prince. You know, especially if you're just starting out, it seems endless the amount of deals that you're analyzing and how far off you are with the numbers. But as the relationships get better, the deals will start getting a little tighter, and then before you know it, you got one. And then once you got one, it's just like magic happens, and you know, you get another one, and then another one, and before you know it, it's like, wow, where did all these deals come from? But it's all because you put the work in, you know, you get the experience, you build the relationships, and then your business starts to take off. No matter what market it is, it just happens in every market. But you know, there's a saying about change. You know, change is hardest at the beginning, messiest in the middle, and then it's nirvana at the end. So, you know, just remember, it's going to be hard, you know, hard to get going. It's going to get messy, but then it's going to be great once you get through it.
All right. Yeah, I like it. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck out there.
All right. See you next month.
See you there. By the way, everybody on the line, you're all mastery students, so therefore that business building is part of your package. So, you know, there's no charge. You just got to let us know that you're coming so that we can let the Harvard Club know the count of who's coming there, and also we, you know, we have enough chairs and tables set up. So if you haven't sent any confirmation form, send any confirmation form or call the office and just let them know that you want to confirm over the phone. And those, I already said the dates. Okay, who's next?
Up next, we have Arpin. Arpin, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave, everybody. I just have a really quick question about code compliance when purchasing old buildings. Yeah, so when you purchase old buildings, something that was constructed in the 50s or even earlier than that, are you required to bring everything up to code, or are there a certain number of certain things that you have to bring up? How do you go about dealing with codes, code compliance, and buying an old building?
Everything is grandfathered in, okay? Whenever you buy a property, everything is grandfathered in. And then when you own the property, if you make changes that exceed 30% of the property, then you've got to bring it up to compliance, full compliance with the codes. And the smartest thing you can do when you're doing your due diligence on a property like that is to call the building department, ask them, are there any code violations on that property? Are there any outstanding code violations on the property? You're not asking them to go out there and check the property. You're asking them inside of their files, is there anything that they saw that hasn't been completed yet? Because if there is, number one, you're going to be responsible for it if it's not done prior to you taking over. So you need to do that for any building. But number two, they'll let you know, you know, what they're thinking about that particular property.
Mm-hmm. And how do they calculate this 30% of the property? So this property that I'm actually questioning, I know it has some issues with the sewer system. Some wiring is off. It has issues. How would I know if it's 30%, 40%, 50%? Is there a department in the city I need to talk to, or a contractor, or how do I go about figuring that out?
You can certainly talk to the building department about that and ask them what their feeling is on the repairs that you're doing. Is it going to exceed the point where it's going to require you to bring everything to code? But it's usually rehab. So let's say if you're updating all of the wiring, that wouldn't be considered, you know, an above 30% type of situation. But if you're rehabbing, say if it's 100 units and you're rehabbing 40 units, that would be considered above 30%.
Got it. I also have one more question about these rehab, retrofits, whatever that needs to be done in these old buildings. Do you include the cost of those repairs in your strike price?
You include the cost of the repairs to your property if it's you first got to determine how much it's going to be and then how you're going to finance them. So you're either, if it's a smaller amount, say, you know, 3% or less of the purchase price, mm-hmm. you could probably get them from your investors, and that would go into your closing costs, and your closing costs are in your cash-on-cash return ratio. So therefore, they're accounted for in the numbers. So, for instance, an example that we give during the Multifamily Millions Bootcamp is an assumption deal that we do, and we show how we were – it's a 200-plus unit deal, I think it was 30 units that we were going to churn, and we needed $130,000 to turn those units. So instead of getting construction or a bridge loan to do it, we just got the $130,000 during the raise. Now, if we needed $300,000 or $400,000 and it threw our numbers off, then we may go and get a construction loan, or we may get mezzanine financing for that. And again, we'll have to make sure that those numbers work within the deal. But that's the alternative to getting the funding to doing the rehab.
Mm. You don't try to negotiate that with the seller. No, I have to spend $300,000 to bring fix it. Sorry,
you can do you can do it a couple different ways. First of all, if you get money back for repair allowance, which you can try to negotiate anyways, you can't get more than 3%. If it goes above 3%, then the bank's going to require that you get a construction loan. So if the repairs are higher than 3% of the purchase price, you could certainly negotiate that the seller give you, you know, all that money to get it. But typically the bank, and you could, you know, it's not usual, but you certainly could. But you're probably more apt to get a construction loan.
Okay, got it.
And
thanks,
sir. When you get a construction loan, you should, and it's also called a bridge loan, you should consider Fannie Mae financing when you do that, because Fannie Mae financing will give you the bridge loan, and then they'll refinance it when you're ready at very minimum cost.
I was also looking at delayed financing through Fannie Mae the other day. Are you familiar with that? This is for single families. Do you think I should ask the question or no?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, so single family houses, Fannie Mae has a program that they call delayed financing, where if you pay cash for the house, you can go back and finance 80% of it through Fannie Mae. 80% of the new appraisal, like you buy the house for cash, you do the repairs, you have it appraised, you go to Fannie Mae and say, okay, this is the new value of the house, and they could finance up to 80% of that. Are you familiar with the program? I've just heard about it. I don't know any details about it.
I'm not familiar with the program, but why would you do it? What's the benefit?
Well, you have the cash in hand again, and you can go invest it in a different building.
No, I know. Typically, people, you're trying to get into a deal without taking any cash out of your pocket. And if you were going to, if you're going to pay cash for property and then fund all the rehab as well, and then go to refinance it, you could really refinance with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, anybody at 80%. Well, maybe not necessarily. I guess if it's an investor property, the loan to value might only be 70%, so you get an extra 10% to that Fannie Mae program. That's the benefit I see. Are you seeing any other benefits other than that?
Actually, I don't think so. This is a new way of thinking. I'm thinking about it completely differently.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. That's a better way of looking at it. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. Good luck out there.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Who's next? Who's next in the wisecracker line?
Up next, we have Tommy. Tommy, please state your question.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Good. How's it going?
It's going all right. I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I just got a question in regards to a two-property portfolio. Should we underwrite each property separate or together?
How many properties?
It's a two-property portfolio.
What's the size of each?
One is 81 units, and the other one is 52 units.
Yep. And how close are they to each other?
They're right across the street from each other.
But they're on separate deeds?
Yes.
Yeah, underwrite them each differently. Yep, separately.
But when if I was to make an offer on it, you know, once I evaluate both of them, get the strike price and all of that, when making an offer, should the offer be on each one separately, or is it okay to combine the price for both of them?
You can combine. Usually what you do is you combine and then you explain. You know, you explain what you're paying for each one.
Okay.
And, you know, I was asking you questions at the beginning, but even if I didn't ask any questions, the answer always is to on the larger properties. If it was a bunch of smaller properties, it might be different. But on the larger properties, like 50 units or above, anytime you have a portfolio of anywhere from 2 to 100 properties, you always have to underwrite each one separately and then come up with your overall price. And it's interesting because somebody over the weekend came to me and said, you know, that they had put a deal forward to Jeannie, and, you know, Jeannie had come back and said that we were just too busy at the moment and we weren't looking at any other deals, which surprised me because we're always looking at deals. So I wasn't quite sure, you know, what Jeannie meant by that. And then she said, too bad, it was a good one. This was a 1,700-unit deal. And then I knew exactly what Jeannie meant by that. Because when you do a 1,700-unit deal, you know, with, you know, I don't know how many properties it was, maybe 15, 17, 20 properties, you have to underwrite each one of them individually, you know, and it's, you know, just doing one deal is 2 to 3 hours. And then if they're in separate areas, you've got to underwrite all of the competition, and it takes a long time. We've gone after a couple of different portfolios, three of them to be exact. Two of them are 100 million mark. One of them was 132 million. Thought we were going to get it until some Chinese investors came in and went 152, 20 million higher. It's crazy. But the amount of work that it takes to do those, you know, the individual deals for the larger ones, I mean, if it's just two or three, that's fine. But when you start getting to 8, 9, 10, we've realized that most of those deals don't come through. So, you know, we'd much rather spend our time going after smaller deals and putting them into our portfolio. So the answer is yes. Anytime you have a portfolio, you underwrite individually, then you determine what your overall price is. And typically they'll come back and ask you, you know, if you don't tell them, how did you segment them out? What are you offering for each property? And a lot of times, you know, if they can't get their portfolio price, they'll break it out. And they'll start selling them one off as well. So you want to be prepared for that if they do that.
Okay. All right. Well, that just answered my question.
All right. Good luck with that deal.
All right. Thanks.
Sounds interesting.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Right across the street from each other. You're welcome.
Yeah, they're right across.
Nice.
All right. Appreciate it, Dave.
You're welcome. All right, who's next? We got 15 minutes, and I got Bernie. If anybody remembers, Bernie was at Elevate. He's my business coach. Harvard Executive MBA comes in on Tuesdays at 2, every other Tuesday, and we sit and we chat about business. It's really good. So he's coming in at 2, so I've got a hard stop at 2 today.
Okay, are you ready for the next question?
Yeah.
Okay, we have Jenny on the line. Jenny, please state your question.
Hello. Hello, Dave. I have a few questions. You mentioned that at the time
how many,
of entrance, you need to think about exit strategy. So,
how many questions do you have?
I have several, but I think one or two are important. Others I can.
Okay, give me the most important one because I've got, and I'll be happy to take questions offline, but I've got a meeting that's supposed to be at 2, and I want to get a couple more people in.
Okay.
So what's your most important
question? Okay, my question is for the CapEx. CapEx, we're looking at one deal right now, and that deal have a lot of, uh, only we're only getting financials until May this year, so 5 months into this year, and the capex per door already reaching over 700 per door for the first 5 months. My question is, when you're underwriting the deal, normally how do you deal with this type of capex number?
What are they doing?
If you look at the really the details, they're doing like exterior, they're doing interior, and not really. They're renovating 6 units as of this year. They finished six units.
How many units is it?
Around 100.
So, yeah, they're doing some sort of a repositioning. If CapEx is over 250 per door, over 300 actually is what the number is now. So with 300 per door consistently, especially 500 to 700, they're doing some sort of repositioning. So you just figure out what they're doing and look below the line. It will all be there below the line in the CapEx section.
Yes, they put. I feel like they put some regular maintenance also in the CapEx, but also they're spending quite more on the CapEx also. So while underwriting the deal, should I consider the CapEx and then offering a kind of lower number? Because if considering CapEx, the number really...
Listen. You take the CapEx. The CapEx is below the line anyway, so it doesn't affect your operating income. All right, but the real question is how much if they're doing this much CapEx now, are they just finishing or are they just beginning? You need to know where they are in the process of this repositioning. All right, so I mean there may be a lot more. You got to do a unit by unit walkthrough and find out what else needs to be done. That's the big question here. What else needs to be done?
Okay, I see. And a quick follow up is right now it's October, and the right now it's October. The financial we're getting is until May. Is that common, or we should get back
May's
and ask?
Numbers? No, you should be getting August's numbers, all the way through August.
I see. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, who's next? Let me take a couple more quick ones.
At the moment, we have no callers with questions.
Okay, well, I guess everybody's trying to get off at 2. All right, so sorry to be a little rushed there at the end. I did want to get in as many people as I could. Homework, get in and get out there and put in 2 offers and get into 2 networking situations. But you know what? You just heard me say that most people don't do it. That's why most people aren't successful, because you don't do the simplest things, which is just simply put in 2 offers or just simply get into 2 networking situations. I know it's not simple. It sounds simple, but I know it's not simple. Because that means you've got to analyze 2 deals. It doesn't matter, how far off your numbers are from the Trinity on this deal or how low your offer is going to be. Because if you look back into your manual, it tells you how to talk to a broker to put in a lowball offer and not to get that offer, but to actually create a relationship. So really what you're doing is we're asking you to go out there, put in 2 offers so you're in the game, you're creating a relationship, so you have the opportunity from that broker to get a better deal in the future than what you're finding on the Internet. So that's number one. And number two, going to 2 places where it's either a business meeting or a social situation where somebody is going to ask you, what do you do? That's difficult too, because that means you're networking. That means that you're going there and you have this expectation, you put pressure on yourself that you need to perform. I get all that. I get how difficult and how hard it is to do this business, especially at the beginning. But you know what? If you don't do it, you're not giving yourself a fair shot, to be successful in this business. Because those 2 simple acts of getting out there and networking for funds, you need funds to get deals done. And some people don't put in offers because they're afraid that they don't have the funding. Therefore, it's almost like a catch-22. You can't do one without the other, but yet you can't do the other without the one. So you just grin and bear it and go do it and put yourself through the motions. And if you ever read that book, The Compound Effect, and do a little bit every week, which is the 2 and 2 is just a little bit on that side. But it's the most important little bit. When I was in a rush at the end and I was talking to that lady and I said, she said she had a bunch of questions and I want to get more people in. I said, what's your most important question? What can I answer for you right now that will be the most, give you the most benefit? That's what I was asking her. It's the same thing when you're planning out your week. You want to do the things first that are going to give you the most benefit. You want to plan them into your schedule. The thing that's going to give you the most benefit is to get out there and get 2 offers in. Because, number one, there's a potential that you might get a deal. But more importantly, there's a potential that you might start a new relationship. Well, more importantly, there's a potential that you're going to get a counteroffer on that deal, I mean on that offer, and it's going to get you in the game, and you're going to get more confidence, and more confidence, you know, gets you putting in more and more offers. And it's the same thing with funding. You know, if you put yourself in the right places, which are business groups, okay, social situations look good, but that's like a crapshoot. You know, people ask you what you do, you tell them what you do, they may be interested, they may not be. You go to business groups, and business owners, the majority of them, they're interested in real estate, but they're too busy with their business to be looking at it. They know what's going on in the real estate market. So you have a much more receptive audience there. And, I mean, what's the worst case that could happen when you go into one of these meetings? That you don't meet anybody? Okay, so you don't meet anybody. So what? So you go to another one. What's the other worst thing that could happen? You do meet people and they say no. Well, what are they saying no to? You're not asking them for money. You're just telling them what they do. They're not going to say no. They're either going to be interested or they're not interested. If they're interested, they're going to ask you follow-up questions. If they're not interested, they're not. So what's the worst thing that could happen? You get a bunch of people that aren't interested. So what? So you go to the next one. So that's how you got to think about this. To be successful in this business, you got to do the things that are the most important to do to be successful, and that's the two and two. And from there, everything else falls off of it. So do your homework. Go out there, put in two offers this week, get out there, get into two networking situations. I'll tell you what, if you do that every week for 3 months, I guarantee you, you will have a deal. And if you don't, come back to me and let me know, because I will be shocked, and I will personally analyze what you're doing at either the events that you're going to or the brokers that you're talking to figure out where the disconnect is, what you're saying that is disconnecting the other party from doing business with you, because then it does become a problem of you. It's not a problem of the system because, you know, that simple system of two and two, it works. But you've got to say the right things to the right people. So then if it's not working, that means that something that you're doing is not right. So then we analyze that. So that would be the next step. So I'm getting off my soapbox, but that's what it's all about, taking action. So take action. I'll actually be back next week because I missed a week because of Elevate and Elsa and the other thing we did last week. Jeannie had 2 weeks in a row, so I'm going to be 2 weeks in a row. So come on the call next week and tell me about your successes on 2 and 2, okay? All right. Bye, everybody.